Welcome to the Sunstone Podcast, everyone. I'm this week's host, Stephen Carter, and I'm here to tell you about an undercover operation I've been doing. So, Sunday school and I have always had a hard time getting along. First of all, I'm not very assertive in groups. I just despise having to raise my hand to get called on, especially if there are already plenty of people who are more than happy to take up space, which there usually are, and especially when the teacher keeps on not noticing you raising your hand. But of course, the people around you notice, and you start feeling like you're back in high school and losing more and more of your already very limited social cachet every time you raise your hand and get ignored. And then there's the fact that my first thoughts on any subject are never very interesting. I have to dig around, question a few of my assumptions, go down paths I don't usually take, and then I have to craft the resulting thoughts for my audience. And usually, by the time I've gotten to that point, the discussion has moved on to something else. And third, there's the fact that almost no one knows me in my ward. And I don't blame them. I'm a weird Mormon. I show up by myself. And as I have found out, a lone man wandering an LDS church building is practically invisible. No one knows what to do with you. You don't have any of the outward signs of a safe, responsible Mormon male, namely a spouse and children. So, people are kind enough, but none of the conversation starters are there. You know, none of the possibilities of integration. And then there's the fact that we lived in this ward's boundaries for 2 years before I even started actually attending. Which is a long and simultaneously tragic and funny story. Because in my previous ward, I was actually the Sunday school president. It's possible that I made history, being the first person to be both editor of Sunstone and a Sunday school president. And I actually really enjoyed the calling. Since I have a degree in education, my teacher training classes kicked some pretty major butt, if I do say so myself. I tell you all about them, but they don't really apply at the moment. Because, well, we're all doing virtual Sunday school classes right now, and I was teaching them about how to prepare in-person classes, which have a very different dynamic. So you're off the hook. But then, one of my children came out as transgender, and that changed everything. I've written about some of my experiences in Sunstone, so I won't go over them here. If you're interested, just go to the magazine page on our website and search for my name. One of the essays is titled Iron, and the other one is titled Call Me By My Name. The short version is that, even though they did try a little bit, my ward just couldn't find a way to integrate my daughter. The LDS culture simply wasn't built to value her as she was. But one of my friends had been telling me about a Unitarian congregation that he had been a part of for a few years, and it sounded like the perfect place for my daughter. This is starting to sound like a missionary story, isn't it? Well, it is a kind of missionary story because we did go to that congregation and, by gum, they knew exactly how to integrate her. It was actually one of the sweetest experiences of my life, to see my daughter accepted so openly and lovingly into a spiritual community. I dearly love that congregation, and I still attend it regularly. So, there was a year where I brought my family to the Unitarians in the morning, and then zipped back home afterward to run the Sunday school program and teach my class. It was only possible because Sunday school was held during the second hour of church and our ward was on the 1 o'clock schedule. And then we moved, and our new ward schedule overlapped with the Unitarian meetings. We all enjoyed the Unitarian meetings, and the LDS meetings, frankly, just caused us stress. So we disappeared from LDS activity for about 2 years. It was the right decision, but also, as I've said, an awkward one. When my daughter moved out and took charge of her own life, I started going to my ward 1 week and my Unitarian congregation the other week. But as I said, I didn't fit very well into my ward. Not just because I was a seemingly unattached male, not just because I only showed up every other week, but because just about any get-to-know-you question someone might ask me in church would have a complicated answer, and people aren't looking for complicated answers in church. You're probably wondering why I even put the work into going back into my ward. I mean, being the editor of Sunstone for the past 12 years, I'm certainly aware of all the church's problems. Why would I want to go back after I found another spiritual community? I have a few answers for that, and probably none of them would get quoted in General Conference. First, I realized that I no longer counted on the LDS Church for my spiritual sustenance. I had found other sources, sources that had actually been there for me when I needed them. My spiritual sources no longer had a gatekeeper. I didn't have to pay 10% of my income to access them. They were free and abundant. I kinda felt like Bilbo Baggins coming home from his adventure carrying the dragon's treasure. But that doesn't sound like a very good reason for going back to my ward. I mean, if I have my own spiritual resources now, why entangle myself in a notoriously high investment religious community? Well, I had learned a very inconvenient truth while I was Sunday school president. Even though Mormons are very good at hiding it, the fact is, they each have a unique and astonishing soul that can be called forth under the right circumstances. Circumstances which I will readily agree don't usually occur in church. They are, in fact, actively discouraged. I had seen this blossoming happening again and again in the classes I ran, which, as you might imagine, were very different from the run-of-the-mill Sunday school classes. But here's the weird thing. Even though Sunday school, Priesthood, and Relief Society classes are usually dull and lifeless, they're actually structured to be transformative spaces. Think about it. How many weekly situations do we have where people come together specifically to talk about the human condition, about things of the spirit, about how to live in community, about the mysteries of life, about their difficulties, about their successes, about meaning? The closest thing I can really think of is a college-level humanities seminar. So what I saw were two things. Number one, I didn't need Sunday school or priesthood meeting to meet my spiritual needs for the week. I could provide those for myself. Number two, there is all kinds of potential for transformative discussion in the structure of these classes. Someone just needs to be on hand to help it happen. I'll admit that my interest in going back to my ward was kind of an experiment. I wanted to see what would happen if someone like me was there, especially now that I didn't have any power like I did when I was a Sunday school president. Could I make something interesting happen? Something that would make more use of these classes' potential than is usually made? But like I said at the beginning, asserting myself in physical groups is very difficult for me, especially when I'm the new guy, and I'm a slow thinker. So for the next 6 or so months that I attended my ward every other week, I kept quiet, and I watched the class dynamics. And they were pretty normal, a bunch of people wanting to make sense of life, but instead repeating tired old stories and adages. And then the pandemic came along, and church closed down. Now, that was interesting to watch, because my Unitarian congregation got immediately to work, and they had a virtual meeting ready the very next week. Meanwhile, the Mormons had nothing. As the weeks wore on, the Unitarians were refining their meetings, and the Mormons were doing nothing. In fact, you might remember that the Utah Area Presidency came out and officially discouraged wards from having any virtual meetings. I have my own theory about why that happened, but I won't go into it here. You can hear me explain it in episode 57. So, my experiment was suspended before it could really get started. I suddenly had zero contact with my ward for over 6 months. Just the occasional newsletter. It was kind of a bummer. I felt like I was finally getting recognizable enough to actually say something in class, and suddenly it's over. But then, in mid-September, some kind of revelation must have come down from on high, because an email went out to the ward announcing that we'd be having our first virtual Sunday school class. And I realized that my chance had finally come, and that it was actually better than I had expected. Because it felt like everything had been reset. We were going to meet online, which we had never done before. So there were no precedents yet. We also hadn't actually interacted in 6 months, so a lot of the behavior patterns that hadn't included me had faded. When we met, we'd be setting the patterns for how we'd converse and what we tend to talk about and how deeply we would dive into subjects, how vulnerable we were willing to be with each other. How often does a chance like this come up? You know, to be on the ground floor of building a new conversation culture. I decided that I needed to be there and that I needed to be ready. This was a better experiment than the one I had originally planned on. Instead of having to work my way into the ward discourse little by little and having to navigate all the social aspects that in-person meetings require, I'd be starting from the same place everyone else was, figuring out how to have a conversation on a computer. I loved how I'd have my own little box with just me in it, and that I could use the raise your hand function, and that I could turn off my camera at any point, that I could leave at any point. I was getting giddy just thinking about how different this context was from the previous face-to-face context that had presented so many obstacles to me before. And so, for the first time in a long time, I opened my LDS library app, only to discover that not only was it no longer called LDS Library, I was no longer signed in, and that I had forgotten my password. So I drew on all the fortitude of my pioneer ancestors and figured out how to reset my password. And after some digging around, I figured out which Book of Mormon chapters we were supposed to be talking about that week in Sunday school. And it was kind of interesting, as I read through the material, I went through all the stages I remembered going through when I'd prepare my lessons as Sunday school president. Stage 1. Holy Hannah, this is the most stupid stuff I've ever read. How do these lessons manage to just get dumber and dumber? Number 2. All I want to do is argue against everything in here. I'll never actually get the lesson ready. Stage 3. Well, maybe I could make a passable purse out of this sow's ear here. Stage 4. This scripture reminds me of something Franz Kafka wrote. I wonder how they might inform each other. Stage 5. Holy smokes. This provides an entirely different interpretation of this verse, but stays absolutely true to the text. Number 6. Now, how do I present this so that the people in class don't run me out of town? The problem is, those steps take place over the space of a few hours. It takes so much work to dig anything useful out of church manuals. So, I spend a few hours trying to find 2 or 3 substantial things to say over the course of the lesson. And here's where I actually found another perk to this virtual meeting thing. I realized that I could write down word for word what I wanted to say. I could craft it to precision. I could even give it a narrative arc if I wanted to. And then I could read it from my screen and look just like I was saying it off the top of my head. Don't judge me, but I pretty much scripted out what I was going to say. A scripture reference here, a conference quote there, a sprinkling of folksy charm to help it all go down. I was in Sunday school stealth mode, baby. And then Sunday actually came, and I had to decide how stealthy I really wanted to be. I was used to the Unitarian meetings, where people just come as they are, but I remembered that Mormons absolutely love to dress up for church. Would that love bleed over into virtual meetings? Or would there be a different dress code? How much of the Mormon uniform should I wear for Sunday school? How far down my body should the uniform go? Would the most righteous among the attendees discern it if I wasn't wearing Sunday shoes? Could I get away with a button-down shirt, tie, and sweats? I am, by nature, a coward, so I'll admit that I wore everything but the shoes. I even turned on the lights that I used to light myself for Facebook live streams, hoping that they would make my countenance shine. I opened my email, found the link, clicked on it, and suddenly felt really nervous. I mean, what were they going to think of this new face popping up on their screen? What would they think when he talked? What would they think of the things he'd put so much time and thought into? Would he sound just like a total lerp? The screen came up with its squares full of unfamiliar faces, attached to their Sunday best, all of them staring at me. Except that, actually, almost all of the squares were black. Besides me and the teacher, there were only like two other people out of about 20 of them who had their cameras on. The rest were just, you know, white names floating in dark aquariums. Not even the bishop had his camera on. And then the other two with their cameras on weren't dressed in their Sunday clothes. It was just me and the teacher. So if I wanted to stick out, I'd done a great job. And then the other two turned off their cameras. And being the good little Mormon I am, I followed the crowd and turned mine off too. And it may have been for the best, because it turned out that the teacher had no idea what Zoom was or how to use it. So he couldn't be offended that no one had their cameras on. We spent a lot of time listening as his son, who was sitting just off screen, coached him and watched him learn to use the program. But we did finally get to the lesson. And when the teacher asked his first question, he was met with a silence as vast and impenetrable as the squares of outer darkness before him. No one was excited to break the ice. Strangely enough, I had written down an answer for just this question. So I turned on my camera, unmuted myself, and made the first Sunday school Zoom comment in the history of the ward. And then the dam broke. Everyone turned on their cameras. Comments flooded in. The spirit bore witness to us all. Okay, I'm kidding. I turned off my camera again, and the teacher continued. And when he asked another question, he was met with glacial silence until somebody finally spoke up, often from their black void. I made two more comments that lesson and was stunned when somebody sent me a private comment telling me how much she and her husband had appreciated my thoughts. From zero to hero over the course of half an hour. But I'll admit that I had another reason for getting my foot back into my ward's door. Virtual Sunday school classes started about 2 months before the election, and I'll admit that I was certain that Trump would win. I even had a bet down on it. It wasn't the election per se I was worried about. I was worried about what seemed to be an impenetrable wall between America's liberal and conservative populations, a wall that was growing higher and wider. And it occurred to me that Sunday school classes were actually one of the few places left where people from every point on the political spectrum could get together and talk. And not only talk, but talk about important things. Things that, hopefully, transcend politics. Things that could bind us together in ways that would keep us together, despite the stress of political division. And that seemed like something worth preserving. A few months ago, somebody wrote to me in response to a recent podcast episode, saying that she had gone back to church after 10 years of being away, and that the thing that had surprised her the most was how conservative the ward had become. All of the liberal and even moderate people had disappeared. And this set a fire under me. One of the basic principles I live my life by is something Eugene England taught me, both by his words and his example, that you grow the most when you prove contraries. It was an idea he picked up from Joseph Smith. Proving contraries, in Gene's opinion, means not that you prove which contrary is correct, but that you place yourself between them, in the place where you feel the gravities of each one equally, and then you stay there, allowing them to stretch you between them. It's very uncomfortable, sometimes even anguishing. Our first instinct, mine anyway, is to always get out of there, to, you know, embrace one of the contraries and reject the other, to name one good and the other evil, because it feels good to unite ourselves with a cause, to let it become part of our identity. But, as Lehi put it, it must needs be that there is an opposition in all things. All things must needs be a compound in one. And I realized, from this woman's email, that an essential opposition was disappearing from LDS church experience, and that without it, the experience would lose most of its power. The most effective way I had of bridging the political divide in America wasn't to post on Facebook, but to attend my ward's classes, both to represent the contrary that I most identified with, and to put myself in a position where I could feel the pull of other contraries. Now, I want to make it clear that I didn't do this for righteous or idealistic reasons. I was not going in because I wanted to sacrifice myself to save American political discourse. I was actually going in out of a sense of self-preservation. I knew that most of the people in my ward would be voting for Trump. And I was certain, as I said, that he would win, putting me in the one down position. And knowing how charged the political landscape was, I wanted to get into the ward conversation before the election happened and promote the idea that we need each other because of our differences, mainly because our differences in perspective, when they're brought into conversation, allow us to perceive a larger swath of reality. Because, you know, each of us is kind of like a little camera walking around, recording the 0.00000001% of the world we see. And we see all of that through the various filters we have, and we forget most of what we see, and our memories change a great deal of how we remember what we see, but we still believe that somehow our particular path through the world, the particular things that end up in our memory, are the truth about the world. And even though we believe it, empirically, it just isn't so. But fortunately, we can talk with other little cameras and get their perspectives from their little journey through the world, which means that we have access to a tiny percentage more of reality. To me, that's the main reason we get together in groups, to see more reality. Except that often we get together into groups only to uphold a particular version of reality. Now, it's a good way to get people organized and headed in the same direction, but since it limits the input of the other cameras, it can only address a limited swath of reality, which means that we aren't aware of many of the consequences of our words and actions. Our righteous cause will inevitably provoke opposition and unintended consequences. Strangely enough, I get the feeling that the LDS church leadership was feeling the same way I was, because the October General Conference seemed to be a call to valuing diversity and using it to build unity. I've said that it was the least excruciating conference I've been to in decades. I actually enjoyed some of the talks. And to my great surprise, I agreed with two-thirds of Dallin Oaks' talk. I have a little theory about that conference, by the way. I think the church leadership had realized that they could no longer use the authority card as effectively as they used to. They started realizing that, well, for a great many Mormons, their religious identity is subordinate to their political identity. It really came into high relief in Utah with the whole face mask issue. When the church officially endorsed masks, there was this huge backlash from a bunch of its Utah members, many of whom explicitly placed the authority of the general authorities beneath the authority of the Constitution. We, the people, took precedent over follow the prophet. And then, add to that our current media context, where we spend way more time talking about fake news and conspiracy theories than anything else. YouTube channels, personal blogs, and Reddit personalities who are creating their own open-source evidence base that anyone is allowed to add to, they're the ones gaining ascendancy, while traditional news sources and academic publications are declining. In other words, the definition of authority is undergoing a major reconstruction, and that reconstruction seems to be leaving LDS church authority more and more out in the cold. The funny thing about this entire scenario is Mormonism grew out of just such a context, with Joseph Smith rejecting all other religious and political authority, creating his own religious discourse out of a new book of scripture, and pushing it forward with new revelation, kind of like what QAnon is doing, which is politics transformed into religion. Anyway, I think the LDS Church realized that the authority card wouldn't work to unite Mormons anymore. Orthodoxy to a set of beliefs was no longer feasible. The only way we can be united is to actually be united. And since we're all different, we need to draw strength from that difference. We need to deliberately work to forge unity from diversity. And then the unimaginable happened. Trump didn't win the election, and I happily lost my bet. I made sure to go to church that weekend because I really wanted to see what would happen. I wasn't surprised at all to see the Unitarians celebrating. I had been to their Sunday meeting when Trump had won 4 years before, and I felt the palpable sense of doom that had hung over our every word. And this time, it was just the opposite. They were so excited. They were so relieved. And they were so ready to make the world a beautiful place. They're really lovely people. Then I watched my ward's sacrament meeting online and heard, a bit to my surprise, nary a word about the election. However, the speaker was a high councilman who said that he had been called to give this talk on Friday night, which, as we all probably realized, was when it started to become apparent that Trump wouldn't win. And he gave a talk that quoted from all the conference speeches about building unity from diversity. Then his wife drew her talk mainly from Cheryl Eubanks' conference talk, One More Ode to Unity from Diversity. And I realized that my ward was feeling how I was expecting to feel at the end of the election, in the one down position. And I knew that the conversation I had been pushing every Sunday absolutely must go on. Just because my guy won the election didn't mean that I could withdraw. To do that would be to cut my ward members off from the type of people who supported a political perspective different from theirs. And then they'd have to make that person up. And when you do that, it's inevitably a straw man that eventually turns into an enemy. The contraries needed to continue exerting their force on our discussions. My ward members needed to hear me, and I needed to hear them. I need their cameras every bit as much as they need mine. I need to be a part of the community. I need to stay in that tension. And believe me, it is tension. If I relied on Sunday school and priesthood meeting to fill my spiritual needs, I would be starving. I really do need another source in order to have anything to put into this particular venture. It takes me probably 2 hours each week to process the lesson and write something that presents my interpretation of the world in such a way that my ward members can understand it. I wouldn't be nearly as serene and poised if I were trying to make my contributions on the fly. I'd be too busy working my way through those first 2 stages, boy, is this stupid stuff, and I just want to argue against everything. It'll be interesting to see what happens when we get back to physical Sunday school, if that ever happens. Will I walk into that room and actually feel like part of the class? Will people remember me? Will I remember them? Will we react differently to each other than before because of our virtual classes? I do hope that we actually get to that point. I'd love to see the results of my experiment in being a Sunday school spy. All of that said, I'll have to admit that I was so relieved when I received an email saying that state conference was this Sunday. I realized that I really needed a Sunday off. I was getting tired. Maybe I'll binge on Rick and Morty instead. Cleanse the old palate. Well, thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the Sunstone Podcast. As the holidays approach, and as you cast about for tax-deductible donations you can feel great about, you couldn't do better than to head over to sunstone.org/donate. Sunstone has run on donations for our entire 45-year history, and this year is no different. Well, actually, this year is a little different, because we had to cancel most of our money-making events. So, your contribution, whatever it might be, will be more deeply appreciated than usual. That's sunstone.org/donate. Or you can give on the Givelify app. Just search for Sunstone and you'll find us. Thanks for sticking around. We'll see you next week.